Karaniya Metta Sutta, and this is one of the very interesting and very popular sutta, because metta, loving kindness, is something highlighted in this sutta, and it is very beautifully crafted. And again, Buddha mentioned it is certain qualities that one needs to develop who is inclined towards Nibbana. The one who is intended to attain Nibbana, to realize Nibbana, he has to have certain qualities. And Buddha one by one explained these qualities, starting with Sakko, and that means being skillful, then Uju, being straightforward or being fairly upright, and then very upright, and then Suvaccho, that means easy to advise, Muddu, that means soft, gentle, Anathimani, and without any arrogance. And then Buddha keep on further explains other certain qualities, Santussako, that means one is very, say, content. Then Subharo, easy to support. Appakicho, having less duties. Sallahukavutti, that means having some lighter, peaceful faculties, rather kind of having frugal way of living. Santindriyo, having frugal, having restrained faculties. Nipako, that means fairly careful, very intelligent in a way. Appagabbo kules, appagabbo, that means cautious, not being kind of rough, but kind of a tender, soft attitude. Kulesu ananugiddo, who doesn't have any kind of attachment towards the families. Now this is particularly Buddha mentioned about the Sangha. And then Buddha keep on explaining how one in general should behave in a way that in the later time, one is not reproved, one is not being blamed or criticized by the wise people. Then Sukhinova Kemino Huntu Sabbe Satta Bhavantu Sukhitatta. Now Buddha starts explaining about metta, how one has to have that kind of attitude, loving kindness attitude in one's mind. That is why particularly this sutta is named as Metta Sutta. So now it is elaborating various aspects of metta, loving kindness meditation. Yeke chipana bhutatti tasava thavarava anavasesa. So either they are, the beings are either completely liberated people, nobles, or they are not, they are simply worldlings. No one is exempted. Everyone is included. Digava ye mahantava. So that means either the longer ones, the large ones, majjima, the middle ones, then anukatula, that means the very small ones, dittava ye additta, so the ones we have seen and ones we haven't seen, dureva yecha dure vasanti avidure, ones is closer to us, ones who are far away from us, bhutava sambhavesiva, that means whoever already arisen, already had birth, and the beings who are in the process of having birth, sabbe satta bhavantu sukhitatta. So basically, including everyone, all the living beings may be well and happy. So this kind of very beautiful loving kindness is something basically highlighted in this sutta, again and again emphasized in this sutta. And actually you can understand, before explaining this loving kindness, Buddha mentioned about certain qualities one has to have who is intending upon attaining the Nibbana. And now after explaining those qualities, now Buddha explaining this metta. Actually, we can think that probably Buddha is explaining vipassana in terms of metta. That means one is using metta as the base, as the foundation. And once it is well established, one can use it as a foundation, as a base, and then on top of that, one is going to develop vipassana. And then Buddha in general mentioned, no one should deceive another. So that means one always have to have a truthful, honest, helping each other. So that kind of a very beautiful attitude. So in essence, what Buddha highlight here is the samaggi, is the peaceful abiding of the people. Now, if you can consider a group when they are meditating, if they are maintaining a very cordial attitude, a helping attitude towards each other, then it is quite easy. Then it is actually quite conducive, and with a lot of warm heart, one can continue one's practice. So that is why it is mentioned in the Dhamma, Sukha Sangha Samangri Samagdhanam Taposuko. So it is a blessing to have the kind of peaceful environment, peaceful abiding with the kind of a cordial group. And for them, it is a blessing to meditate. Dharosana Patika Sanya Nanyamanyasa Dukkamichaya. So no one is maintaining any kind of an aversion, any kind of an ill will or anger. And then instead one is having kind of loving kindness towards everyone. And there's a very beautiful simile Buddha highlights here. That is the very much like the, we can say the foremost kind of loving kindness, where a mother who is loving her only child, say a mother has only one child, say a son. And then she even giving up her life, she is protecting, safeguarding her life, her son. So likewise, Buddha mentioned, evampi sabba bhutesu manasambhave aparimana. Like that, like such mother, one is developing a kind of a loving heart towards all the living beings. Mettanch sabba lokasmin manasambhave aparimana. So that means, and towards the whole world, one is developing that kind of a loving kindness. Aparimana. So there is no limit. Actually, probably you can remember when I was explaining metta meditation. So this is how we are systematically developing it. It is not that immediately we can have a kind of a boundless, unlimited kind of loving kindness. At the beginning, probably we may be starting with ourselves. May I be well, may I be happy, may I be free from suffering. So likewise, one may develop loving kindness towards oneself. But later one can include maybe a person, maybe a teacher, maybe a lovable teacher, respectable teacher, and to him we are developing metta. Then we are able to distribute metta or emanate metta, send metta towards another person. So already we have enough metta towards ourselves. And to the same level, now we can develop metta to another person. Now we are expanding. Maybe we are including so many, few more people who are respectable. And then we are including likable people. And again, now we are going to include some neutral people. And ultimately, we can include even the people that we don't like. So basically, in terms of the human beings, now we are capable of including all the human beings. All the human beings may be well, happy, free from suffering. So likewise, now we are capable of including all the human beings. And without limiting to human beings, one can even spread metta towards various other beings. You know that there may be animals, there may be unseen beings, there may be celestial beings, there may be Brahmas. And so likewise, different levels of beings are sometimes explained in Dhamma. So one is including all the living beings, and that basically mentioned, so you are not having any kind of a barrier, any kind of a limitation. So your metta is kind of limitless now. There is no any boundary. And again, there is no any particular direction. Actually, that direction also something that slowly we are expanding. At first, probably we are spreading metta towards the front direction, and then to your right direction, and to your rear direction, and to your left direction, and to the upper direction, and to the lower direction. So likewise, one is spreading metta towards all the directions. Then you are very much like a metta source, a source of loving kindness. You are simply emanating, spreading metta towards all the beings in the whole universe. So that is where sometimes we call as Sima Sambheda, where you are breaking all the barriers. So there is no barrier now. There is no any particular group now. To every being, to whoever in any direction, now you can spread metta. So this is what actually the culmination of loving kindness, or what we call as metta cheto vimutti. the freedom of mind through loving kindness. So when one is having this, actually certain other suttas actually explain there are 11 benefits. Particularly if you remember in the Anguttara Nikaya, there is one sutta called Mettanisansa Sutta. So there Buddha mentioned 11 benefits of loving kindness meditation. So that benefits are not mentioned here in this Metta Sutta, but in the Mettanisansa Sutta, those 11 benefits are explained. Sukham Supati, Sukham Patipunjati, Napapakam Supinam Pasati. That means you are waking up very joyfully, happily. You are sleeping happily without any nightmares. Napapakam Supinam Pasati, you are not seeing any nightmares. You are not seeing any kind of dangerous, fearful dreams. Manussanam piyohoti, you being lovable to all the human beings. Amanussanam piyohoti, even to the non-human beings, you are being lovable. Devata rakkanti, you being protected by the celestial beings. And then Buddha mentioned that your face become beautiful and you being protected from poison, weapons, and the fire. And so likewise, there are 11 benefits being mentioned related to the metta meditation. So that is, for that to have, actually one has to reach the goal, or that is what we call as the metta cheto vimutti, where you are capable of spreading metta to all the direction without any boundaries, without any particular person or group of people. Now you can spread metta towards all the living beings in all the directions. Now suppose one is doing like that. Mettancha sabba lokasmin mana sambhave aparimana. So now he is spreading metta to the whole universe without any kind of boundary. Uddhang adota chiriyancha asambhadang averang asapatta. Now either in the upper direction or in the middle direction, above, below, across, there is no any kind of an obstacle. And he can't find any kind of enemy, without any enmity even. And now you are spreading metta to all the different directions, and even the cross you can spread metta. And not only you are doing it simply in the sitting session, you can have it in the walking, you are doing it every day whenever you are capable. So likewise, your heart is filled with metta. It has become kind of a default nature of the person. Tittham charang visinnova sayanova yavatasa vitamiddho. So that means whenever you are free from sloth and torpor, whenever you are not drowsy, you are not sleeping, actually you are maintaining that kind of a loving attitude. Either you are standing, either you are walking, sitting, lying down. As long as you are aware, you are mindful, you are capable of maintaining that kind of a loving kindness attitude. Etang sating adhitteya, brahma metang viharang idamahu. That means you are like a Brahman. So you know, the person who has developed fair amount of jhana, concentration, and again the Brahma viharas, he is the person being born into the Brahma realms. So Brahma viharas, those are the abidings or divine abidings. Metta, mudita, karuna, upekkha being recognized as four Brahma viharas or four great abidings. So those are the ones now one is developing. So that is actually metta is one of them, actually the starting Brahma vihara. So one is now having that sort of boundless, limitless kind of metta. And he is mindful about it. It's not that you are unmindful or you are being absorbed to it, but you are mindfully, with awareness, you are having that metta base. Probably if you are familiar with typical vipassana, say in Nisarnane, probably we are more talking about anapanasati, rising and falling. So those this kind of kayanupassana based methods. So when you are developing those, actually there's a level that you may reach. So that becomes your foundation, that becomes your base. where you are not clinging to anything, not grasping anything, and you are maintaining kind of a free mind, unattached mind, and you are using that as a foundation, using that as a reference level, as a kind of a very pure state of mind, using which you are further cleansing your mind, recognizing subtle defilements, and you are further and further removing those subtle defilements. So you are using that as the base. Now in metta meditation, once you reach that metta cheto vimutti, where you have no boundary, and again there is no particular limit or any particular group, specific group of beings, rather you can spread metta to all the beings in all the directions. So that state you are being used as the base, as the foundation, as the, say, your stage of further practicing vipassana. So while established there, now you allow the mind to behave as it like, and then you are recognizing whether it is having greed, whether it is hatred, whether it is delusion, whether enmity or any whatever the little defilements you are capable of recognizing, because you are fairly based on a very pure state of mind. So why can't you maintain that pure state of mind? That is because of still having some defilements. So if you are able to completely free from your mind from any defilement, then you should be able to maintain that loving kindness throughout. Why we can't do it is because of the defilements. So with that you are understanding, okay, still certain asava, anusaya are available, and you are recognizing the behavior of the mind when it is under the influence of those asavas and anusayas. And after recognizing them, so you are simply allowing them to pass by without getting deceived by them. And again you are re-establishing yourself in this loving kindness. So loving kindness become very much like the base. So if one is capable of doing it, so Buddha mentioned here, Dittincha Anupagamma Silava, and he is a moral person, and he is with proper view, correct view, and he is with a proper vision. Dasanena Sampanno. Now this is actually completely into vipassana. So even though it is very briefly mentioned in this last verse, actually it shows a long path. So basically when you are developing vipassana, you may reach kind of a proper understanding. At the beginning you are having what you call as the Lokika Sammaditti, the mundane kind of Sammaditti. So that is what why we are developing loving kindness and certain other qualities what we have discussed. So that basically helping one to have proper Sammaditti, proper view, correct view. But that is still mundane. In order to have supramundane type of Sammaditti, you have to develop vipassana. So when you are developing further and further vipassana, then only mind become very much unattached, not grasping, not established at any place. So then you are living at another level, or you are experiencing another level, that is, we can say as a kind of a supramundane level, where there is no attachment, where there is no any grasping. And again one is mindful and maintaining morality. And kamesu vinaya gedam. Now as you are continuing that path, and according to this sutta, this particular practitioner has reached the non-returner state. He has reached the anagami state by using this continuous practice. So that is why kamesu vinaya gedam. Now any kind of greed he had towards the sensual pleasures, now he has abandoned. And nahi jatu gabbaseyam punareti iti. As a result of that, he is not coming back to this world. Now this world, the karma world, the sensual world, you know, are sort of limited to have a kind of a birth, either in the mother's womb or in the form of eggs. So likewise, there are kind of physical forms. But in the anagami level, non-returner level, he is not coming back to this world. So that is being beautifully represented from the phrase nahi jatu gabbaseyam punareti. Now he is not returning back to the bed of a womb. That is a very poetic way of telling that he is not returning to this world. He is not returning to the sensual world because he has no sensual desires. So basically he first established himself in the loving kindness, boundless kind of loving kindness. While being there, he is now purifying himself, recognizing greed, hatred, delusion. And so slowly, slowly he is purifying himself. And here at the last verse, it indicates now he has purified his mind to the level of a non-returner. As a result of that, he is not returning back to this world. He is not returning to this world. He is not returning to the sensual realm. So that is represented in the last verse. So you can see how Buddha in a way started with very basics, meaning that you need to develop these kind of different skills, and later he gave loving kindness as the kammatthana, as your meditation object. And once you are systematically developed there, using loving kindness as the base to further develop vipassana. So it's very much like a samatha pubbangam vipassana. So loving kindness become your samatha practice, and while you establish yourself in that samatha practice, now you allow your mind to behave as it like, and you be mindful about it. You recognize how again and again mind go and grasp, what are the defilements still available. So now you do vipassana, recognizing all these different defilements, and in a way you are developing sammaditti, and now you are developing supramundane level of sammaditti, and that path or that kind of practice has taken one to a level of a non-returner. So that is the end of this sutta. So basically, starting with giving us instructions to have a very wholesome kind of life, aiming kind of a spiritual development, and these are the certain qualities one needs to have, so that is being highlighted. And then giving instructions for samatha, loving kindness meditation, and indicating what is the benefit if you are practicing vipassana based on that kind of loving kindness meditation. So with that summary, I like to conclude the Metta Sutta, and now I like to open the session for questions.
Sarai Bhante, we have four questions today.
Right.
First question is the Dhammasangha question. I will go with that one first. Dear Bhante, I want to verify something I heard in a discussion recently on day-to-day mindfulness practice. As I understand, there was a highlight that whatever the situation is, example, even when we are doing something wrong due to habit, it is better to be mindful throughout as long as possible. My question is regarding moral shame and the link to Sabbavasa Sutta we learned some time ago. If we are doing something wrong deliberately, example, knowingly telling a lie to salvage some situation, what is the benefit of being mindful throughout? We know we are doing something wrong from the onset, and being mindful might magnify the impact and may facilitate the act as well. My personal feeling is better to surrender to moral shame and move away from the act as soon as possible rather than facilitating and dwelling in it mindfully. Much merit for your explanation with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, this being mentioned in what's the sutta called, we can call it as Sati Sampajanya Sutta. So in Sati Sampajanya Sutta, there's a very beautiful gradual training highlighted. So let me share that sutta with you. So I conducted as a sutta teaching in the Wednesday sutta teaching session. Now you can see one is developing mindfulness and clear comprehension. So one is being mindful, and to that mindfulness one is incorporating clear comprehension, and one is developing that. So as one is continuing that, as a result of that develop mindfulness and clear comprehension, moral shame and moral dread becomes its result. And then using which you are having kind of restrainment of the sense faculties. And then you are very much into the virtuous behavior. So therefore, when you are doing something wrong, if you are trying to be mindful, you can't continue that wrong activity. So if one is telling, say, I am while killing an animal, I am being mindful. So we can't say that the proper mindfulness and clear comprehension has work it out properly. Because you can see here, if proper mindfulness and clear comprehension was working with him in his mind, then he can't continue because it's a wrong activity. So mindfulness and clear comprehension will tell you, okay, this is wrong. This is something not useful. This is harmful. This is harmful to yourself. This is harmful to another person. So likewise, kind of a warning would be given from mindfulness and clear comprehension. So if you are neglecting them and still continuing, so that basically is not the kind of fault of loving this mindfulness or clear comprehension. Rather, it is because maybe your defilement power is so great, so grave, and that's why it is so influential, you can't even stop yourself. Say, for example, you are being angry to someone. Now the mindfulness, clear comprehension, that will warn you. So don't get angry, don't go to any argument, don't go for any quarrel. So likewise, kind of a warning may come from mindfulness. But still, our anger is, if it is so powerful, probably we may ignore that warning. We may continue and go and have an argument. So that is because of the great power of the defilement. It's not a fault of the mindfulness and clear comprehension. So if fair amount of mindfulness and clear comprehension has developed, the very moment you being mindful, the defilement will fade away. So that is the nature. So the first level actually indicate your mindfulness and clear comprehension is still weak. It can't handle anger or lust, whatever the defilement arising in the mind, it can't handle. So that is why it being subjected to the defilement. But strong mindfulness and clear comprehension is available. The moment you establish yourself in mindfulness and clear comprehension, the moment you understand this is wrong, it will simply fade away. You don't even have to do a lot to overcome that defilement. So therefore, at that level, mindfulness and clear comprehension is so powerful. And that is why, so this practice has to take morality into its practice at whatever level. Either from the beginning, one may have virtuous behavior, morality, or continue with mindfulness, or one without considering much, one start developing mindfulness, meditation, and as you are continuing the meditation, slowly it has to incorporate virtuous behavior according to this particular sutta. So therefore, it is not the problem with the practice, but the power of the defilement that is one is undergoing. So that is the problem of that. So when enough mindfulness, enough clear comprehension is available, then it is no more a problem. Yeah. Can't hear Chamila.
Okay. This is question number 2 of 4, is mindful walking. Dear Venerable Sir, mindful walking practice reflection during the last few days. My object of mindfulness is sensations on the soles of the foot. Initially, I note left and right with the sensations, which fades away gradually. While the sensations are blurring, multiple thoughts come and go, and I get distracted frequently. After some time, the blurred sensations come back to walking process again. This happens automatically many times, and I don't try to bring the mind back to observations again. I get sleepy time to time. I get tired suddenly time to time as well. Walking happens with this mixture of things switching on and off automatically. Namely, blurred walking sensations throughout thought distractions, sleepiness, tiredness, back to walking sensations, etc. For some reason, I feel like okay or neutral to these experiences in my walking practice. I just continue walking with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I think you are doing well. So basically, when you are progressing, so this kind of a mixture would be available. So at the beginning, you are establishing yourself onto the step or whatever the contact, whatever sensation available, and you are recognizing its behavior, its changes and etc. And as you are continuing that, then you are coming to a level that everything is very much like mixed. Everything is very much like blurred. So then you are not very much even interested about it. So you can't distinctly recognize those different phenomena. Everything is very much like a flux. Now kind of a dispassion arises towards the whole process. So now you are even might you might feel kind of bored, not interested. So mind slowly kind of abandon that and try to find out its own kind of a refuge, own kind of a dwelling. So likewise, a certain transition is now going on. So I mean, here you don't need to do anything, simply continue your practice. Then what happens is mostly so reaching to this state become more quick. Suppose previously you need to practice 45 minutes in order to reach this state. Later you may reach this state within 30 minutes. Later within 15 minutes you may reach this. So once you reach there, just bear it. Just continue your practice as usual. So try to maintain a very equanimous attitude towards what is going on and minimize whatever the proliferation you are continuing in the daily activities also, and allow the mind to relax. Then you can further speed up the process.
Question number 3 of 5, dear Bhante, this mindful sitting. My question is regarding being mindful on thoughts. I have been practicing for some time now and would like to pay attention to the thoughts which are coming randomly during the practice after the breath fades away. Most of the time I realize that even though I can be alert on the rising side of thought and the existence of a thought, I cannot specifically observe the cessation of a thought. Even though I can keep a distance from these thoughts and observe them, I do not see them disappearing. Sometimes I observe that I get carried away by thoughts as well and come back to the observation mode after a few minutes. I seem to be getting tangled in the content of the thoughts. Is this the reason that I cannot observe the appearing and disappearing of thought as an end-to-end process, Bhante? With metta, that is the end of the question.
It could be a reason, because if you get entangled in any of the thought properly, I mean, you can't see the thought. So basically, suppose there is a thought coming, so it has kind of a little temptation. Suppose it's a lustful thought. So it has a little temptation, it has a little joy, a kind of a joy. So as a result of that, it is in a way trying to deceive us, tempt us. Now we being slowly getting caught up with it, and we are driven by that, and we are adding few thoughts. As a result of that, we are now slowly improving or say developing that thought. Now the mind becomes a little lustful. Suppose now you establish stronger mindfulness and you are not allowing the mind to be carried away by this lustful thought. Now the opposite cycle is developing. You are not promoting, you are not fertilizing, you are not strengthening that thought. As a result of that, the fading away part happens. But when you are continuing the practice, so this process may happen very quickly, and the amount of support that you are giving to the strengthening of lustful thought become less and less. So that means a lustful thought may come and you are aware, and immediately as you are aware, it has gone. So you can't even recognize the fading away part because it quickly vanished. So if it quickly vanished, then you don't need to worry thinking that I hadn't seen the passing away part. I only seen how it is arising. So you don't need to worry about that, because I mean, why we are looking at it, why we are observing it, why we are investigating it is to avoid any delusion. So if we are able to avoid any delusion, so then mind may not hold it, mind may not entertain it. Rather, the moment it arises, you are aware, and once you are aware, it is gone. It becomes very, very quick. Therefore, this kind of a change may happen in your practice. So I think nothing to worry. You can simply continue the practice. So there may be changes going to happen in the future.
Question number 4 of 6 is a general question. Dear Bandhu, when people around me influence my thoughts and actions, I used to think that they are a problem for me. But now I realize that their actions are actually helping me. For example, if someone is getting angry with me at work or at home, I think that they do not have any respect for me and I am not valued, etc. But with mindfulness training, now I am able to observe my feelings and thoughts in this situation. So actually, they are doing me a big favor. If I didn't have them to oppose my way of day-to-day life, I would not be able to practice my mindfulness training in daily life without actually being at a retreat or meditating. So now I don't actually oppose them. Rather, is thinking, bring it on. Since it is a chance to test my practice and move forward in the practice. Even though normally we think that troubles in our life is a problem, with the practice you realize that it is a blessing in disguise rather than a problem. Is my understanding correct, Bhante? Please advise with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, your understanding is correct. As you correctly mentioned, so the problems become a blessing in disguise. But when you are going through it, it's very difficult. I mean, when we don't have a problem, actually we can say, okay, I can handle it. I mean, they are a blessing in disguise and that is where we are improving. So all the things that we can mention. But when we are going through the problem, I mean, you need to understand it's a real, difficult time. But the practice really helps you to bear it, to handle it. And again, to test yourself. Now, when we are continuing our practice, so certain strengths are being developed, and whether those strengths are capable of handling these difficult situations, or are we still really bothered, are we still really stressed out, tensed because of the external situation? So these are in a way helping us to understand where we are, what are the skills, what are the levels that we have developed. Am I capable of handling any kind of a distraction, any kind of a difficult situation, any kind of a problem? Or am I still not capable of handling it? Say someone is criticizing you. And as you said, someone is neglecting you or not giving enough respect, not taking care of you, not even value your presence. These are little things. I mean, how people get into arguments, get into misunderstandings, get into doubts, and even in the family life, even people going for divorce, all sort of things. So maybe started with this kind of a little disrespect, ignoring, not giving enough respect, not properly receiving. So likewise, I mean, these little things, actually when they accumulate, ultimately blown up. But if we can recognize how these little things are making a little frustration in our mind, making some sort of a threat to our ego. Now, the main problem is that actually. So, we have kind of a personality, we have some kind of an ego, and another person is not respecting me as a person. He is ignoring me as a person. He is not giving the place that I basically deserve, me as a person. So everywhere the person comes to the picture. I am a person, I am an individual, I am a respectable person, I am a very special person. So likewise, we prepare a person, to that person the other party hasn't given enough recognition. Now I am getting angry. So if we can recognize how this kind of a idea, how this kind of an ego, or creation of personality, adding a fair amount of friction to the picture, adding fair amount of difficulty to the picture, creating a lot of suffering. So that is where actually we need to understand, particularly when we are developing vipassana. So these are the subtle aspects that we need to understand, how I making happens, how mind making happens, how I am going to happen. How you are feeling the presence of a person, Or are you simply experiencing, simply going through certain experience without feeling a presence of a person? I mean, these are very interesting areas actually, when one is promoting or one is continuing one's vipassana. So these are the very interesting areas that we can explore. So when we are going through any kind of a practical life situation, why at a certain time it appear like unbearable, and why at another time you can handle it properly? So there may be a situation where you are calming down yourself and not allowing the self ego to come up, personality view to come up. You are properly handling it. You are having pumping enough wisdom to the picture. Then you can smoothly handle the situation.
Question number 5 of 6. This is the regarding the Dhamma sermon. Dear Bhante, much merits for the great explanation of the Metta Sutta and linking to the practice, Bhante. As I understood, one can use this base of unborn Metta state for further practice vipassana on clinging, aversion and delusion. Is this base of unbound metta similar to the base explained in the Kayanupassana practice, which is unattached and unbound to the 6 senses, bases and away from defilements? If metta, that's the end of the question.
Yes, yes, definitely. So that's what I reminded. So in the typical practice that we pass in the Nissarnamaniya, so that is what we are promoting, either say Anapanasati, rising and falling, or any of the elements meditation. So different mechanisms are there, or even Vedananupassana. So all these different techniques ultimately take you to the level of Anisita Anupadana, where your mind become unassociated and you are not attached to anything, you are not grasping anything. Now you are trying to maintain that non-grasping state of mind, unattached state of mind. In the loving kindness meditation also, you are reaching the same level. Your mind become completely expanded. It is not limited to a particular place, particular boundary. Now you are maintaining a kind of a boundless state of mind. And you can use that as the base of vipassana, as I mentioned in the what we do in the Kayanupassana. So while established there, in a way you need to relax yourself. You need to allow the mind to behave as it like. You need to little loosen the concentration, so that mind has the freedom to move. So when it is moving, you are carefully recognizing where it is moving, why it is moving, what are the type of defilements arising. And slowly you do the vipassana practice, recognizing these different defilements, not being deluded by them, not being carried away by them. Rather, you are simply recognizing it and letting go. Recognizing, letting go. So that is a way of fading off various defilements. And very similar to what we do in Kayanupassana. Not only Kayanupassana, even Vedananupassana, Chittanupassana. So all these different techniques will take you to the same level.
Question number 6 of 6 is the last question, and it's again on Dhamma sermon. Dear Bhante, I heard that the 4 Brahma Viharas are developed through the 4 jhanas. Loving kindness is developed at achieving jhana 1. Compassion at jhana 2, mudita at jhana 3, and equanimity at jhana 4. Is this correct, Bhante? And jhana are necessary for developing metta, etc. Thank you, Bhante. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, I mean, there's a little correction we need to do. Actually, loving kindness alone can develop first jhana, second jhana, and third jhana. Then Karuna, compassion, alone can develop first jhana, second jhana, third jhana. Then mudita, altruistic joy, alone can develop first jhana, second jhana, third jhana. And what you call the equanimity can develop, the fourth jhana. So basically, loving kindness is capable of developing all 3 jhanas. And we can't say, by the way, because if we are developing more bias towards samatha, then you can go, through loving kindness, you can go even to the level of absorption. Say, for example, you are developing loving kindness meditation, and you are maintaining a particular person. Say you are taking a respectable person, your teacher, whoever, and you do metta towards him. And now assume that you are very successful in it. And now you close your eyes and you are simply having the nimitta, the sign of that particular respectable person. And to that sign, you are developing metta, further and further spreading metta. And ultimately, you get absorbed to that, the sign, the lovable sign, you get absorbed. So this is very much the samatha approach. But on the other hand, suppose you develop metta, and at one time you are turning your attention towards the heart and try to recognize the loving feeling. You know, when you are developing loving kindness, you start feeling it. Honestly, if you are developing loving kindness, you start feeling it very strongly in your heart. Now, at one point, without further developing loving kindness, you stop looking at the external object and spreading metta towards that particular external object. Instead, you introspect yourself. You divert your attention to yourself, to your heart, and try to recognize the loving feeling. Now, what is going to happen to this loving feeling? And you are, in a way, you are now trying to practice Vedana Anupassana. You have generated loving kindness feeling using the typical loving kindness meditation. And once it is fairly significant, fairly prominent, now you turn your attention back to your heart, and now you are understanding what's going on into this feeling. Is it increasing? Is it decreasing? Is it maintaining at the same level? Is it fading away? So likewise, now you are doing vipassana in terms of Vedana Anupassana, we can say. So there are different methods are available. Even though we are discussing these, I mean, it doesn't mean that we all have to do everything. Different methods are available. So at that time, actually, we can't say they are kind of samatha meditation. So now you have loving kindness feeling, and you are recognizing that loving kindness feeling, and you do some kind of a contemplation, sammarsana. So, and by the way, interestingly, so this is referred as first jhana in the vipassana tradition. In the vipassana tradition also, so you can introduce first jhana, second jhana, third jhana, fourth jhana into vipassana. So when you are capable of paying enough attention to a particular phenomena, again and again you are having your applied thought, you are exploring it, examining it, therefore you have vichara, the examination part, and when it is successful, you are having piti, rapture, and you are quite comfortable, sukha is available, and your mind is equanimous. Having fair amount of concentration, so all the jhana factors are present. So at that level, therefore, we can say you are in the first jhana. So Mahasi Sayadaw, therefore, in vipassana, he mentioned, even Mahasi Sayadaw, and not only him, even the Sayadaw Upandita, one of his popular book called In This Very Life. So he introduced this vipassana jhana. So, even though you are not absorbed to the object, you are being outside, you are carefully observing, and the jhana factors are available. Yeah.
Oh, we just got another question. So, it's actually related to the previous question where talked about other people and their actions towards you. So the question starts further to question 4. Sometimes I find myself struggling with not so much ego, but with what I believe is fair, just, all right. Often attacks arise from jealousy or misunderstanding, and my mind gets frustrated because I keep justifying I don't deserve it because I am not in the wrong.
Can you repeat the last statement? I am not.
Because I am not in the wrong.
I am not in the wrong.
Yeah. So basically, because they are not wrong.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. So that's all it says in the questions. I think we just want some advice on whether that thinking is correct.
Right. I mean, either way, I mean, either you are in the correct side or either you are in the wrong side. So anyway, you can have kind of a regret, you can have a remorse, you still can have anger. So all these different possibilities are available. But when they are available, I mean, if you can sort of recognize it without fueling it, without continuing it, so that is the turning point. So I mean, unknowingly, because of lack of mindfulness, because of the power of defilements, assume that we are fueling the defilements to some extent. But there may be a situation, okay, at one point you stop it. You apply brakes. You step back and watch the situation. So that is the turning point of your life or turning point of that particular incident. So rather than being driven further by the defilement, you stop yourself and see the defilement as a defilement. See anger as anger. See lust as lust. See jealousy as jealousy. So likewise, now you are no more being deluded by the defilement, rather you are able to recognize it objectively.
So that's the last question, and we'll finish for the day. I think we just only have a few minutes, so it can end the session now. So thank you, Dante, for this valuable time, and also share the merits with the organizers and all being both seen and unseen who enable this program. I would also like to thank and pass merits to the participants for joining the program today and practicing and sharing the questions. Teruan Sarnai. Sadhu, sadhu, sadhu.
Yeah, Teruan Sarnai.